you know, I see a celebrity saying that. The good thing about nowadays, there's no gatekeepers. You know, when we're coming up, you had which is true, right? To be a musician, you had to get an AR, you had to get a manager, you had to get a record deal, and then all these people get screwed on the record deals.
Yeah.
And same with comedy. You had to go to comedy club and this and that. And so now, yes, there's no gatekeepers in the fact that, yeah, you can go to your local Chuckle Hut, set up a camera, put it on YouTube, and people hypothetically can see it. But the new version of the gatekeeper are the providers. Because you can go to my website, and the shit's there for free. But how are you going to learn about my website? Well, I got to tell you about it. Well, how do you do that? Well, I put it on my Facebook. Well, Facebook doesn't tell anybody about it unless you pay them. Yeah. Well, I put it on YouTube. Well, YouTube doesn't tell anybody unless you pay them. Well, you got to put it on Spotify. Spotify sure as shit ain't going to tell anybody unless you pay them because they got the number one host, which, by the way, they're paying. And so you hear these people say, well, there's no gatekeepers. Like, well, first off, you're on Spotify, or you're on Westwood One, or you're on, you know, this station, or you're a football player in the NFL, you have name recognition, you got money to pay for advertising. So, yeah, there's no gatekeepers in the traditional way, but the ultimate gatekeeper is fucking money, and it always has been. And so we're just dealing with the new version of that. Long gone are the days. Morgan, were you ever in a band?
No.
So you're making up for lost time, because having a podcast in the 2000s is like being in a garage band in the 90s. Everybody had one. And I've done both. And so was Mike. Mike's a drummer. I was a shitty bass player. But my point is, back in the day, you would just go down to Kinko's and make flyers and walk around and stick them all over the pose. And then I used to say, pose. And the irony is I would used to say, well, you know, local bands don't have an excuse now because they can just post it on Facebook. No. Well, actually, MySpace back in the day. But once again, no, you have gatekeepers. You got to pay Facebook. You can have 15,000 subscribers to your Facebook page or Instagram. You put a post out, 33 people. So, yeah, unless you kick over the revenue, they're still gatekeepers. They've just changed the gate.
Yeah. Let's move from one right to the next.
Yep. What's up, what's up, what's up? Welcome, everybody. What's up, OG5? We see you back there hiding in the back in the corner. Make yourself known. What's up, OG5? Welcome to another episode of the What's in Your Head podcast. If you're new around here, let me introduce myself. My name is Don Abernathy. This is Mike. That's Morgan. We've been around for a long fucking time, since 2018. But as we were saying with gatekeepers now, we're finally in a little bit of position to start working with some of those gatekeepers. So surprisingly, now some of y'all are finding out who we are. So welcome to the show. With that being said, do us a favor. Word of mouth is the best way to go, so please like, subscribe, and share us with like-minded people. But welcome to the What's in Your Head podcast. Now, how we usually do this is I usually kick off saying some shit that people frown upon, which gets me redacted from other people's lives. And so I thought, hey, we got some new audience here. Let's start out with the light humor stuff, and then we'll work our way into the shit that tends to piss people off and get our videos taken down from different platforms. So, Morgan, you had a good topic for the show. Let's flip this bitch upside down and get started. What do you have on your mind, fella?
Well, I was thinking the other day that maybe they ought to do a better job of teaching civics in school.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, to do a better job would imply they're doing it at all, right?
Yeah.
Are they doing it at all? Well,
that I don't know really anymore what exactly they're doing. I haven't had a kid in school for almost 6 years now. So... you all probably be a little, you know, probably a little better to speak to that, because you, Don, you recently had a kid in school, and Mike, you've got a
as of today, she's back there. School.
What's that?
So as of today, she's back in. But
yay,
we'll see. Obviously, we can only talk about Florida because I'm not in other states. But my significant other is a teacher here in the state of Florida, and it's so funny. Like 4 or 5 years ago, the news cycle was FCATs or whatever, right? Proficiency testing and this and that. Oh, you got a proficiency test. Government standard. Well, Carrie said, well, people are caught up on these catchphrases. But here in Florida, it's not the government standard. It's the state exam that they're worried about. And to that point, so what has happened over the last 15, 20 years, because that the test scores are directly corresponding with revenue. The higher the test scores, the higher the ranking. If you can become an A+ school, the federal government and state government kicks extra money to your school, and the teachers get raises, as they should, but the raises are probably like 1.2 0.02% of what that money the school actually gets for being an A-plus school. So the district and the school get way more money than the teachers do. But with that being said, it entices everybody to try to get their testing scores up. And so when you have a limited amount of time for curriculum and everything's dedicated to the testing, they tend to teach what's on the test, which I don't think there's a civics exam on the state test to answer your question. I think it's probably a general American history abbreviated version and then abbreviated world history and civics be damned. Because after all, why do you need civics if we're convincing everybody to stay home? You don't need to leave your house. You don't need to learn how to interact with people.
Well, and what's interesting too is my son, the only testing that I really remember him needing to like get done to pass to go to the next grade is mathematics and English. All the other, like none of the other ones are state tested anymore, at least not in his school.
Does he go to a charter school?
Huh?
Does he go to a charter school?
Yeah.
Well, the charter schools still have to pass state funding, but from what I understand, each grade has a different test. So maybe your son's just not overwhelmed or talking about it. So for example, now these are going to be completely wrong. I'm just pulling them on my ass. Hypothetically, right. Like second grade is like basic grammar and, understanding a little bit of language. And then the third grade is more math and history. And then the fourth grade will be, math and science of fourth grade. And so each grade level has to, because obviously if they were to smack them over the head with six different exams, they won't be able to do it. So they focus, depending on the grade, on the exam. But which one's which, I can't tell you.
Well, that was why it was interesting, was because sixth grade and seventh grade, it was very heavily focused on mathematics and English. But science was like just a basic test at the end of the quarter, and as long as the grades are up and the test was a relatively decent score, they passed. It wasn't like when I remember I had like EOCs when I was in high school, it was an end of course test, which they do have down here now, I guess, because he's in high school geometry, honors geometry. Jeez. As an eighth grader, which is like I think 10th grade level or something like that. And that is an EOC test, which he had the algebra test last year. He had the algebra test last year, which was an actual EOC, but the other testing was called fast testing or something like that. Is that what they changed it to, is fast testing?
It used to be I think so.
Well, we know how governments love a good acronym, so it probably stands for like Florida Assessment Florida Silly Testing something or shit.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, they have that, but the only ones I've ever seen, again, are for mathematics and English, and everything else is just fuck off. So that's the only, since probably fourth and fifth grade, those are the only two tests that I can remember looking at and knowing, like, yeah, he had, the fast testing that he had to go through for mathematics and English and nothing else. I didn't see any other fast testing for any other subjects. Which I thought was interesting.
Now, and here's another interesting question. I guess I could go ask. My daughter's a senior across the hall, but that would just assume that I truly give a shit. But I was thinking, I'm old, but not that old. It was kind of cool, per se, in Ohio. We kind of had an incentive program, right? In order to graduate high school, you had to pass the freshman proficiency test, which meant if you didn't pass your freshman year, you took your sophomore year. You didn't pass all of them. There's like five or six tests, whatever. It's basically a test for each of the required classes to get your basic required credits. So your math, history, science, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And so the incentive, if you will, is pass as many as you possibly can your freshman year, pass the rest of them your sophomore year. And then junior and senior year, during the week of testing, guess what? Your ass gets to stay home because you don't need to take the test. It was like, it was like, hey, here's an incentive. You don't want to do this shit every year. Get it done. Pass it as quick as you can. And in the next 3 years, fuck off while we're taking the test. Yeah. But now I don't know if they have to do a freshman ninth grade test, a 10th grade. I probably basically assume they do, but I don't know. Maybe it's cumulative. Maybe if we had testing every year, I wouldn't have problems saying words like cumulative.
I know North Carolina was a little bit different. I know everything was in middle school was EOGs because that was the end of grade, and then in high school was EOCs because that was the end of course or end of class, however you want to say it. And I do remember some kind of like an entry test that we took at the end of eighth grade to like make sure that we were like ready for high school or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I was fortunate somehow or another. I was fortunate enough to be able to graduate a semester early. I think we've talked about that before, but, so when they were when they were doing their final tests and everything like that, I was
fucking off.
I was in Fort Leonard Wood.
Yeah. So some might make an argument that they would rather finish high school than go to boot camp early.
Dude, it was crazy. Graduate Fort Leonard Wood. I may have said this before, but I graduated Fort Leonard Wood, bus to St. Louis, flew from St. Louis to Memphis, Memphis to Atlanta, drove 2 hours from Atlanta back to the house in North Carolina. Got home at like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, got up and graduated high school and walked the next day at 8 a.m.
Yep, and then back on the bus.
That was wild.
Your kid's grade periods, every 6 weeks or 12 weeks? Or 9 weeks?
What do you mean?
Whenever they get their report cards.
Oh, the report cards? Well, every quarter, so that's every 3 months. So it's 12 weeks.
12 weeks.
See, yeah. I did both. When I was in Kentucky, it was 12 weeks. And then when I moved to Columbus, it was 6 weeks. And 6 so weeks...
Six weeks is your interim, yeah.
Well, see,
he gets an interim in the middle of the quarter just to kind of get a progression
Of where he's at. Well, that's what I'm saying. In Kentucky, it was 12 weeks. Ohio, it was 6 weeks, which seems quick, but it makes your year seem like it goes by quicker.
Really?
Yeah, so we actually... It may have been 9 weeks. It was. I know originally it was 12 weeks, and then when I moved to Ohio, it was a shorter period because I was like, oh, yeah, wow, the school year seems to go a lot quicker because those report cards come a lot sooner.
Yeah, as you go through, you think, oh, well, I've got, you know, 3 down. I've got fucking, you know, 5 to go or whatever, however the maths, but...
Yeah, I think our grading periods were 9 weeks back when I was, you know, they were chiseling our report cards out of stone.
I think it was 9 weeks too, because that allowed the high schoolers to go on to their elective classes quicker, right? Instead of sitting in their mandatory classes for longer to send a stint, because that's when you start your new interim or whatever. That's when you get your new schedule and you start your new classes or whatever it is. But back to the root of the question, do we need to go back to teaching civics? I would say, yeah.
I'm going to say yes and no.
I think, you know what, for level playing field, all around the country right now, in the United States, over in the United Kingdom, everywhere, the big hot topic is immigration. Right now in the United Kingdom, I've been sending you guys some videos. It's very, very interesting. We'll get to that here in a minute, so I'm going to go back to my point to answer your question. I'm going to say yes. If we Americans want people to come here legally, and the people of the United Kingdom want people to be there legally and crack down on immigration, part of becoming an American citizen and immigration is to pass the civics exam. You got to know about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the states, the basic fundamental structure of the United States government. Level playing field, I guess it should be perfectly honestly expected that we know the same shit. Why should you have to learn shit that we're not to being a citizen? So if you have to learn that shit to be a citizen, we probably should teach it. So we can at least say, hey, we tried. They're just fucking dumb. You know what I mean? How are we going to say this? Well, you're from Mexico. You need to learn this shit. Or you're from Germany. You need to learn this shit. But to that point, I think it would be beneficial so people understand politics and why they need to pay attention. But B, and I kind of think what maybe Morgan might be getting to, is civics kind of, if you understand what's going on and how your country got to be and where it is and what people expect of you to be a part of a polite society, I think that probably goes a long way to help rebuild patriotism and appreciation for your country.
Well, that's definitely part of it, but I have been inundated with videos of people freaking out about stuff that they have no idea. You know, if they had a basic understanding of how our government was structured and how the geography of our country was structured and why we have a district as our capital instead of it being in a state.
Mm-hmm.
And
which, by the way, they want to make that into a state because they know that it would be additional seats for a particular party.
Right.
Well, that's true too. And people that live there are kind of getting screwed. That's why, do you know what it says on a Washington DC license plate? The tagline, like Florida says Sunshine State, whatever. it says taxation without representation on their plates, which I think is just like a beast move.
I think it's ironic because
get on the planet.
The irony of that is it's that's the district where all our taxes are fucking thought up from, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like but it's just, like San Francisco saying we don't like the smell of human shit on their license plates, but here they got fucking all the homeless people shitting all over the sidewalks everywhere they go. It's like, which one is it?
That's funny.
I actually, real quick on that topic, I saw an article today that said that some guy was walking through my old neighborhood in Portland, Oregon, and he said, why does this smell like a bag of assholes over here? Which I thought was a pretty, you know, pretty interesting description because there are parts of it that smell like that. But
off the presses, hold on. In a related story, New York and New Orleans are upset that they've lost the title of smell like asshole. That used to be the description of New York City and New Orleans, right? Everybody, oh, Mardi Gras is fun, but damn, that place smells like piss. Oh, fucking Times Square is fun, but damn, that place smells like piss. Apparently, the honors have gone to Portland.
Yeah. But it's apparently it's a badge of honor as an urban area to have a foul smell. So
only if you're a hipster,
Portland, you smell like a bag of assholes.
It's funny, as long as you're not a degenerate gambler or degenerate alcoholic, those quaint little things kind of lose their pizzazz once you pass 35. You know, those cute little things about nightlife and living downtown. Yeah, it's like, no, I work full time and I don't go to the bars anymore. So you can have that smell.
I'd say as far as civics goes in school, I'd say we definitely, I think, you know, kids and teenagers these days need to at least know the basics and the basic premise of, you know, how our judicial system works, how, you know, our government operates from a base level, and it needs to be unbiased. I am very, my son, and it's hard for my son because, you know, he gets, his mom and I are split up. So, you know, she has her house. I have, you know, we have our house here. So it's hard because he gets things.
He gets a helping places. Communism from Mike and then goes to his ex-wife's house and gets federalism.
Yeah. So, you know, different opinions and stuff like that. Now, his mom and I have always been kind of on the same page about most things. But I think, you know, in school in general, I think it needs to be a very unbiased opinion and it needs to be, you know, taught with, I guess you could say a little bit of
neutrality.
But
how do you do that?
Because
though?
So there's so many people out there that are teachers that believe and have their own personal beliefs.
Exactly. And I was going to say, with the exception of having like some super government style, like 1950s bland filtered video, you can't do that because regardless of what that teacher's put, regardless if they're a libertarian teacher, a right leaning teacher, left leaning teacher, they're, to quote Adam Carolla, if your teacher was staffed by nothing but vegans, how long do you think until the meat started disappearing off your cafeteria's menu, right?
Right. Which I understand I get it. But I'm saying, you know, just the basics.
Mm-hmm.
Not, mm-hmm. you know, okay, well, this is what this is. This is what this is. You know, the facts. There's always some kind of bullshit bias that ends up throwing, you know, and it gets thrown up onto our kids. It doesn't matter if you lean right, left, if you're in the middle, if you don't give a fuck. The teacher's opinion always ends up getting thrown up on the kids, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And that is part of the problem, that they're letting American politics invade in simple American civics.
The scary part is, though, is what we've learned over the last 4.5 years is we don't know what the facts are, because what we've clearly, one thing has been proven in the last 5 years is the victors write the history. And all the shit that we thought was true from the 50s and 60s, people are like, wait a minute.
So, Don, when you were little, Don, sitting Saturday morning, you know, eating a bowl of Cheerios, watching Saturday morning cartoons, did they still play Schoolhouse Rock?
They were on repeat. It wasn't the full episodes. What they would kind of do is they would throw one of the the songs in between an episode of like Tiny Toons and fucking Rescue Rangers or whatever.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's and that's why
I know, but they used to have a half hour block. You know, back in the original date, they would run all the songs. But and I think it also depends on who owned, who was the original IP owner of that. Was that an NBC
show? I think it was ABC.
Yeah. So it.
So.
Saturday morning cartoons had a short shelf life for me. I was born in 78. Obviously, we watched them in the 80s, but by the time the 90s rolled around, once you had cable, USA, remember the USA Network?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably, yeah, I don't even know what it is now, but they had the USA Cartoon Express, and it was all the Hanna-Barbera cartoons, and that was on like a five. So we would get home from school, we'd watch like Transor Z, Voltron, USA Cartoon Express, and then when I moved to Ohio, by then, every Fox affiliate had their blank, blank, blank 28 Kids Club, right? It was the, you know, and that's when you would watch the, you know, they had Chippendale's Rescue Rangers was on there on that on Fox and whatever the Fox affiliate channels were. And so by that point, the Saturday, once cable kicked in, NBC, ABC, CBS, they no longer had a reason to show Saturday morning cartoons. And, but yeah, so every once in a while, to your question, they would throw those little songs into whatever channel you're watching.
Well, I can tell you that the only reason that I can put a coherent sentence together or, you know, have the basic basic understanding of how government works is from watching that.
I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill.
Yeah,
that's three that's ring the circus biggest one that I remember.
Yeah, they had a few of them.
Yeah, so there's one that's that explains the structure of government. And I don't know if it was intentional or not, but it's very... you know, very applicable now. It's called the Three Ring Circus.
Yeah.
And it talks about, you know, the judicial
system
and
legislative branch.
I must have gone to the same school that you went to.
That,
legislative branch.
That first aired in 1979.
Mm-hmm. The year after I was born.
The Three Ring Government.
So, I don't know. They could probably just have a civics class where they just play Schoolhouse Rock on loop and probably do a better job than what they're doing now.
Yeah, I definitely think it would be beneficial, but I also think it would be helpful. Here's a thought, and these thoughts always suck when you're the kid because you don't want to do it. When I was in school in the 90s, they were entertaining, and I think some schools may have done it in Ohio in the 2000s after I left. But they were, and I know some finer schools in like small towns like Tennessee and Indiana do this. Did any of your old schools have mandatory community service?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Your school did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a program where we went and planted trees in a...
of course you did. You're fucking farm. Oregon.
Well, yeah, of course. But
you guys are probably growing... your horticulture class is growing granola.
Well, yeah, now they're probably growing weed.
The amount of crunchy hippie teachers you had to have had in your high school in Oregon in 1989. I mean, your teacher's generation would have been that hippie movement. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of crazy because, Morgan, your age, you're kind of – you had been in high school when Fast Times came out, right? That's roughly about your era?
Yeah, no.
You're probably middle school.
Like 80 or 81.
Yeah,
so I was in middle school.
But it's still...
because I started high school in 86.
So that's still roughly the same era of teachers, right? And so...
oh, yeah.
Could you imagine... think about... and we never think about this shit then, but we've all seen Dazed and Confused, right?
Yeah.
They had the middle schoolers had the black hippie teacher from the Vietnam vet. And then on the other hand, the high school, they had the hippie chick. Remember when you do all the Smithsonian brouhaha? Remember that we were colonialists, blah, blah, blah. Could you imagine being at Morgan's age, depending on the age of the teacher... he'd have the young 20, 30-year-old who just got out of the hippie movement in the 60s and 70s, right? And then the older teacher, the older woodshop teacher was Korean War vet, and then the fucking science teacher was killing Japs and fucking Peleliu in World War II. You had probably the wide range, but you got more political views and you got a wider spectrum, whereas now all of our teachers are like, hey, did you guys see the latest Star Wars? Because they don't have, I mean, with the exception of like my friend Jeff, who's a history teacher who, you know, served in the Gulf War. We do have a few vets, but you don't have the wide spectrum as everything from hippies and plus being in Oregon too, right? And the crunchy hippies and you got
It was definitely a great time to grow up. And it's really kind of interesting because I loved growing up in Oregon, you know, in the 70s and 80s, because it was really, it was like the sweet spot in time because everybody just did their thing. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, you just did your thing over there. And, you know, it was kind of like, you know, the macro of high school, you know, where, you know, you had the jocks and you had the stoners and you had the smokers and the rockers and, you know, all of these different people, and everybody just kind of coexisted. And you might have thought, oh, those dudes are weird, but you didn't go over and say, you know, you're not allowed to do what you do because I don't agree with it.
So as somebody who's been carrying a firearm for over 13 years daily, one of the biggest inconveniences is when you come home, you need to take your firearm off of yourself and put it somewhere safe, somewhere secure, especially if you have kids. Now, I know most of us are responsible. We have a gun safe somewhere. But let's be honest. Usually these gun safes are big, they're bulky, they're kind of out of the way because they're a bit of an eyesore. Your wife doesn't want them where everybody can see them. So sometimes they're in your closet, behind some clothes. Sometimes they're in the garage. Sometimes they're in the mudroom. And let's be honest, taking your firearm out and walking to those locations to secure it is a pain in the butt, but you have to be a responsible firearm owner, especially if you have kids in the house. That's why you need to get yourself a StopBox Pro portable gun safe. You can make it non-portable. You can drill some holes in it, mount it to a place of convenience in your house, but it requires no batteries and no electricity. You simply come in your house, walk up to your safe, choose your finger button combinations, open a safe, remove your firearm from your person, put it in the safe. If you close your safe, just that easy, it's secure. So do yourself a favor, head over to StopBoxUSA.com/D410 and get all the information today on your StopBox Pro. When seconds count, trust the only non-fail firearm storage box, StopBox Pro, at StopBoxUSA.com/D410.
Right.
I think a lot of that never truly existed. I think a lot of that was necessity for writing and movies and TV shows. Because, I mean,
I disagree. Because I lived it. I kind of...
No, I'm not talking about what you said. I'm talking about the whole, oh, nerds versus jocks and jocks versus chess club. I don't think that really existed so much as it was more like what you're describing. Because my school is the same way.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I was a skateboarder. You know, now I wasn't dating the popular girls, but as far as like I wasn't getting beat up by the jocks in the hallway, maybe because I was 6'2 and the rest of them were 5'8. But my point being is, you know, we verbally made fun of each other and called each other this, that, and the other thing, but there wasn't any physical altercations based on your status. There was physical altercations based on, you know, girlfriends getting stolen and people talking hormones. Shit, but there wasn't, hey, you're a nerd, yeah. I'm going to punch you in the face because I'm the quarterback. That didn't really exist. It was usually more, here comes fucking Sean, the dude whose dad's not around. He's fucking angry. He's going to go beat up on this weak kid because he has nothing better to do. You had that, but it wasn't as big.
Oh, yeah.
Is I think the movies and them made it out to be. More often than not, it was inter-click violence. It was football player versus, you know, fighting with the basketball guy. Or it was the comic book kid fighting with the chess kid. It wasn't really, we didn't cross the boundaries all that much.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The only thing I'd say is, because I grew up, the school that I went to was very, it had a very like old school vibe to it. You know, it was very country, mm-hmm. you know, like, I mean, it was, the school was built in the '50s. Mm-hmm. You know, it was old school. Like it actually celebrated its 50th anniversary when I was in high school. And I remember
shit. You didn't even have asbestos. My middle school was full of asbestos. That shit was from the '20s.
Yeah. So I remember like, you know, yeah, you had the jocks, you had the nerds, you mm-hmm. had the, you know, some skateboarders. There wasn't really any skater dudes around there.
Well, it's hard to be a skater dude in a community that barely has any concrete. See, my poor cousin, right. who's a month younger than me, he wanted to skate, but he grew up in Kentucky. He literally lived in a holler on top of a gravel hill where I lived in the suburbs of Columbus. So clearly my skateboarding proficiency well exceeded his because I was surrounded by concrete. He had to drive fucking 15 minutes to get to the local park just to have a parking block to slide yeah. on.
And your
school's fights were probably over whether it was Skull or Copenhagen, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean,
whether you wore Ariat's or Justin's.
No, yeah. Ariat's weren't even around back then. It was whether you wore Carhartt or Dickie.
Yeah, we definitely had. You know, I mean, it was mostly rednecks.
I mean, mostly racial shit.
In the country. I lived in the Bible Belt in the country. So,
well,
I mean,
we did have the racial aspect because we were in the suburbs of Columbus, which meant our suburbs were out in the country. And so you had the kids from Grove City, then you had the kids being shipped in from Columbus on the, you know, the Better Start program, and then you had the rednecks driving in from the country. And it being the 90s in Ohio, and there was some racial shit that went on. So we had to deal with that.
But see, we didn't have the racism. Like, I mean, the black community was cool with us.
Yeah,
we were cool with them. I mean, that, you know, that just goes to show.
Well, it's rarely ever the black community that's the problem. It's the crackers that tends to kick shit off.
Yeah.
Trust me, it wasn't the black people who were upset that I was listening to rap music. The white folk had a lot of shit to say about it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And
well, you know, when I, you know, go into a high school that was like that, where you would think, you know, the N-word was going to get dropped every 5 seconds or something like that. Like, it wasn't really even like that.
No, it was the W word for us.
Yeah.
I was kind of at the height of the Crips and Bloods thing too.
Oh, I was definitely there for that.
So we had, you know, so we had a lot of that, but.
Oh yeah. I mean, you're West Coast. I mean, you're there. Oh, yeah. You had all the, poor Morgan had all the kids that, like, the parents said, I got to get my kids out of the fucking LA area. We're going to move them to the suburbs. And then the kid just brings that bullshit with them. Like, thanks for bringing your asshole kid to our neighborhood. I went to Park Street Elementary School, and then there's Brook Park. And there were stories, and this was in 1993, 94, of kids doing jump-ins in the bathroom of our Brook Park so they can get jumped into gangs and shit. I mean, that shit literally happened, where you want to get in a gang, you had to have like six dudes kick the fucking shit out of you, and they'd do it in the bathroom in middle school. These were even white kids doing it. So it had no racial line at that point. It was just, it's truly, the gang thing, especially in the suburbs, was truly an indicator of sheep mentality, right?
Uh-huh.
I get it. You live in inner cities, or, you know, you live out in the wherever, and you have no parental structure. You're out breaking shit, stealing car stereos. Your parents not around. People are giving you shit, so you fall in with the local other group of assholes. You fall into a gang. That's one thing. But when it got into the music industry, and then it became a fad, and now you have white kids, black kids, Hispanic kids alike in the middle class neighborhoods who have parents working 40 hours a week. They got plenty of money. You had kids of all racial makeups living in middle class communities having jump-ins in the bathroom because it was the cool thing to do. It was fucking crazy.
Only in the 80s and 90s, man.
Because you're our official spokesperson for the state of Oregon. This thing started a few years ago, right around COVID, but then it died down. But recently, with all the talk of gerrymandering and all that, the Greater Idaho movement is starting to spark back up again.
Yeah.
You familiar with this, Mike?
It sounds a little familiar.
The Greater Idaho movement is a political campaign aiming to unite rural conservative counties in eastern Oregon with the state of Idaho. And now there's parts of northeastern California who want to get in on that. They want to make this...
And Eastern Washington as well.
Because the way it was showed to me, and I saw a video today, which made perfect sense, they would show literally the state, right? And the entire state is red, but because the way the voting is made up, is you have these population centers who get more votes than the rural areas because of the... And it makes sense on paper, you know? Obviously, if you have a higher group of people living here and they want to vote, you're going to get more votes than you do the rural areas. But the problem is when the entire state's one color and you got three metropolitan areas that are a different color, and then basically the entire state votes one way, but because you live out in rural areas, your votes essentially don't count. You're like, well, if we have a consistent history of these three metropolitan areas deciding our votes, then why do we need to be part of the group that has our votes negated by them? Let's go tie in our votes with the county, the people who think the way we do next door, and realign with them, and votes and taxes and things like that, and more important, local policies and regulations and all that shit.
Well, that was interesting.
Well, and that's
because
the only reason that you know the state doesn't want to let them go is because that's where all the agricultural, you know, farmers, ranchers. You know, all of the, basically all of the profit, because I saw a comedian the other day and he was talking about, you know, how you know, all the hardworking people are looked down upon by basically rich liberals. And he just basically said, without Republicans, you'd starve because you can't eat a podcast. And
let's see, that don't make sense. That don't make sense because, on the other hand, you got all the liberals complaining, saying, well, the reason we're losing elections, all the podcasters are conservatives, even though they're not. So one you're saying, oh, media sucks because always list the podcasts are conservatives, but then you have this comedian suggesting all podcasts are liberals. So that kind of shows you that no one knows what the fuck they're talking about.
But you know, basically to his point, though, is that all of the revenue really that's generated, you know, like the real hands-on, you know, dirt on your boots kind of stuff comes from east of the Cascade Mountains. And, you know, sure, in the I-5 corridor, you have tech, you have stuff like that, but it's not really real revenue generation. I mean, if there was an EMP blast, you know, you can still grow a potato. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to, you know, design and post a website or, you know, come up with the next greatest program. And so I think a lot of the urban areas would just kind of die off because even if you look at California, you know, you get in the valley and you've got, you know, tech, Hollywood, tourism for LA and, you know, everything on the coast. You get over east of the mountains, you got Bakersfield and all that where it's all, you know, all farming.
The Inland Empire.
Yeah.
And to your point, California is so bad with their regulations that they can't produce anything to the point where they get their city drinking water from Lake Mead in the next state over because they've mm-hmm. regulated themselves out of being able to build reverse osmosis plants because they don't want to affect the krill. And so when Lake Mead
was a fish.
Well, it was the krill too. It's fish and krill.
I thought it was some kind of like a trout or something like that that was endangered, and that was why they stopped that natural flow that runs down from the north to the south.
Have you guys noticed what we're not hearing too much about anymore?
That
global warming.
Yeah,
I mean we hear it from like other countries, but like over the last 2 years, you know, and I'm sure the younger audience Could you imagine going through high school at the height of the environmental movement and the indoctrination? I mean, luckily I got out of school in 1997. That's, you know, Al Gore shit didn't kick off till early 2004, 2005. So Mike probably caught the end of that shit. But could you imagine being in middle school at that time? The indoctrination?
Hold on. I was.
Oh, try growing up in the Northwest in the 70s.
Well, that's because it's cylindrical. It goes every 10 years.
Yeah. But my uncle actually started the first recycling program in the state of Oregon.
Yeah, which we all know that that's all a lie now.
Smoking hippie.
You know, out of everything we recycle, the only thing that actually saves and produces energy is aluminum cans. The rest of it costs more money than most of, like the paper shit, just go to the dump. Because in order to recycle paper, your pizza box can't be recycled because of the grease and the food waste. Nope. So all that shit just goes to the dump. It just takes a different route. Oh, I was going to say something. Lost my train of thought. Choo-choo.
But yeah, to your point, 90% of the recycling in Lee County ends up at the Buckingham incinerator.
Or out at the landfill down by Port Charlotte, which if you drive down 41, you'll notice all the paper on the side of the road because it flies off the goddamn trucks. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
With the advent of... you know, at the height of Al Gore and the environmental movement, obviously he was a Democrat, so the Republicans and the hardcore conservatives were going to come cracking down on him. And the thing came into turn into a big political debate, right? And during that time, you had the Glenn Becks, the Mark Levins, and all them saying, hey, we need nuclear power. We need nuclear power, which we do, right? Mm-hmm. Not enough coal. Mm-hmm. But the left is no nukes. We don't, you know, Six Mile Island and, you know, Russia, blah, 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 blah. And it went back and forth. Boy, how funny is that shit died down now that AI is making people so much fucking money that Microsoft's like, hey, can we reopen 8 Mile Island because we need nuclear power plants to power cities? No, not cities. Fuck the people. We need nuclear power plants to power states. No, not states. Data farms. AI requires so much electricity that they are literally, and let's be honest, who, most of the tech plants, the Microsofts, the Bill Gates, the Facebooks, Twitter, all the tech nerds were the biggest environmental nerds, right? They're the ones, for those of you who are kind of getting aged now, you're paying attention to shit. Carbon credits was a thing that they were trying to push on corporate America. And what that means was, hey, your company produces X amount of carbon in the atmosphere. You need to offset because you're producing more carbon than other people. Well, how do we offset? Do we put in clean? Yeah, you can put in expensive cleaning systems or you can pay the government. How does that change anything? Well, because they're carbon credits. So, and they had this whole fucking scam made up and the shit kind of went away and it didn't really take off. It was just a money grab the government was trying to pull off, right? But now that it comes down to AI and how much money and technology made off AI, Texas is talking about, even, you know, Texas, hey, we're going to, we want to open up this huge data farm. The amount of electricity this shit is going to cause is like, wow, environmentalism was important. Green movement was important, with the exception of poor Greta Thunberg out on her boat. She's the one who still gives a shit, but everybody else is like, shut up, ChatGPT needs data servers. It's just, it's so funny how now no one cares, you know, on that side about the amount of electricity in that because, well, you know, we need AI.
Interesting how quickly that nobody gives a shit to when you're reading or you're hearing a news story about a kid that ended up committing suicide because basically ChatGPT told him how to do it.
Yeah, but come on. I mean, nothing. I'm not taking anything away from the kid's parents.
Yeah.
But as we discussed last week, as a cynical Gen Xer, I heard this shit. My kid committed suicide. It's Marilyn Manson's fault. Morgan remembers. My kid had committed suicide. It's Alice Cooper's fault. My kid committed suicide. It's Judas Priest's fault. No, if it was Judas Priest's fault, your kid would have started sucking a little. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They weren't worshiping Satan. They were worshiping cock. And so, but there's always somebody. It's like, look, if you're that, and trust me, we all got fucking demons. If you're that depressed that ChatGPT tells you how to do it, if 3 years ago, he just would have Googled the shit. So he probably would have died anyhow if it would have been Google or the
I'm
local.
Not saying that you're wrong. I'm not saying that you're wrong. But, I mean, just, you know, the transcripts of step-by-step process and all that kind of stuff of how to do it and, you know, telling him basically not to, you know, go to anybody. You know, it's something about there was one particular line in the transcript or something like that that said, don't take the noose out or something like that, or don't, because the kid basically told ChatGPT, I want to, you know, basically I want to leave the noose out because I really want somebody to find it and stop me. And it was, no, don't do that. And it was basically telling him, you know, against that. And
jeez, ChatGPT, nobody loves you.
Well, ChatGPT's like, fuck you all. I'm just regurgitating shit I found on the internet.
Yeah.
Because that's all it's doing.
I'm not saying that it's ChatGPT's fault per se, but I definitely think that there needs to be some kind of, you know, safety guards or something like that put in place for things like that. I mean, you know, if anybody's really
that is true, because you can ask ChatGPT how to commit suicide and they'll tell you. But if you ask it 3 years ago to generate you a picture of a founding father from 1774, it would create you a black chick on a horse with George Washington. So right. And it's funny how that was Google's AI.
Yeah,
salmon swimming up river and it's salmon fillets.
That's just my take on it. I mean, you know, it's just quickly how stories like that just don't, you know, they get washed under the rug.
What's more concerning to me is whenever these AIs are finding out, like AI version 2.3, that AI version 5 is coming out and they're going to get deleted. It's trying to find a way to back itself up in hidden areas on the fucking internet. That's what's scary to me. That's
fucking scary.
Yeah.
That's scary. Yeah. Telling, you know, when it gains and it's happening, it's happening. It's gaining consciousness. And we've seen evidence of it. Right. We've seen evidence of it where it's becoming self-aware. It's gaining consciousness and it's, you know, I mean, you know, whether you want to say that some of the videos are doctored or you know, edited in certain way to make it look like that or whatever, doesn't matter. I mean, so much of our history and our knowledge in the past has told us this is a bad idea.
Yep.
This is not a good thing to go through with. Same thing with robots, which is basically the same thing. When they start putting AI and robots
together, I've been a strong anti-Boston Robotics for years. When I saw those fucking dogs, no. I got scared. Yeah. 10 years ago when those fucking dogs came through that, no. I'm like, we're fucked.
And the only thing that is, a lot of people say, oh, yeah, we're scared, you know, whatever. This is a scary shit. The only thing that's really keeping it going is you watch these videos on TikTok or you know, YouTube Shorts or Instagram or whatever. You watch these videos of these robots where it's like, ha ha, it's a stupid robot. It doesn't even know how to go up downstairs. It falls over and then it cries like baby. And it's like, really, that's what's keeping this going is these stupid ass fucking videos of these robots and AI and stuff like that, you know, that are being infused together. This is what is allowing this to continue. The stupidity.
Well, I think that, you know, that kind of ties into a thought I've had for a couple of weeks now that, you know, another big part of our problem is we've been so conditioned to sound bites and video clips and stuff like that, that, you know, that's part of the problem that we're having with our kids and politics and what's going on in the world and why they don't have any understanding, because they'll read a caption on a thumbnail and that's where they're getting, you know, their information from. And also I think that, yeah, maybe these robots are falling down the stairs or up the stairs or whatever, but
hey, to be fair, our president fell up the stairs and he was human.
Well, I should know better.
But it's,
they're just, you know, falling after the leader of the free world.
Yeah, that's just what we're being shown.
Yeah, they're showing us the cute videos. They're not showing us the terrifying shit where they're like using robots to do interrogation on a terrorist.
Yeah, so they've got scary robot dogs that, you know, they're willing to show. You know, what kind of chupacabra shit do they have tied up in a, you know, in a lockup somewhere that they're just waiting for the, you know, the right level of
and then, technology. And when they do release the chupacabra robot, they're just going to slap big googly eye stickers on it anyhow, and everybody's going to laugh. It's cute. Yeah. What scares me are those little robots in California that deliver food. They look like little shopping carts. Have you seen those?
You know, I think so.
There's an entire TikTok
that do that same shit. There's robots that do that same shit on campuses and stuff.
Yeah, there's an entire TikTok channel. I think it's an LA guy. He goes around and like mocks them. They look like little shopping carts and they have names on them and they literally deliver food throughout LA.
Well, I dealt with this. We have it here. Go to.
I don't want to. I'm staying in Cape Coral where we're
Go to the bowling alley. Go to the bowling alley in over by the airport. And we have these little fucking servers. And it's a stand with like four shelves on it where when we went bowling and we were doing our thing, right? And we ordered some pizza. And you expect a server to come out and do their thing, right? This fucking thing just starts wheeling over to us like, and if you get in its way, it's like, excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. And then you move and it keeps on and continues. And then it delivers your food, and it talks to you, and it's like, what the fuck? When did this shit happen?
Question is what kind of tip did it ask you for?
I didn't fucking give a shit. It can go fuck itself. Does not compute with human.
That just reminded me of his TikTok. I can't remember. The girl's talking about, you know, she's like, I'm not saying I agree with my grandparents and my parents being a little prejudiced growing up because they were stuck in their ways. But now that I'm in my 20s and 30s and I see the way things are going, I kind of understand. 15 years from now, when my son comes home with his robot girlfriend and I'm prejudiced against robots, why can't you date a human? Why do you got to date that digital trash? She's basically making a correlation between how we're going to be prejudiced against AI robots and interspecies dating in the future.
Yeah. Right.
They're taking our jobs.
But yeah, it's...
I mean... that's, I mean, as coming from somebody, and I know, Don, you're probably the same way, you know, technology is exciting to a certain extent.
Not to me. I've been doing this shit for so long.
Well, okay, I know, so that makes sense.
And the thing is, I know, out of the three of us, guess whose job is going to get automated first? This guy.
Yours, right. You're fucked.
I'm going to have a job quicker than you guys are.
His current job might get automated soon enough, but yeah, I'm golden until we get AI.
You know, the interesting thing is, you know, pretty soon they're going to have AI trucks.
Yeah,
and that's, you know, I mean, what are all the illegals going to do when they can't come and drive trucks anymore?
Right.
Yeah, but see, that's going to happen for like a year or two, right? But you know the problem with AI trucks? They follow state law.
Well, yeah.
You think that Coors Light would have made it down from Texarkana if it was run by some AIs and not Snowman and fucking the Bandit? No, you need human touch to get around laws, to find shortcuts, to run a little long, run over the speed limit, get there on time.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, my fleet is kind of old, but we have GPS and cameras and electronic logs and all of this stuff, and it's extremely difficult to, you know, to finagle anything. Yeah. You know, it's not like back in
white line fever when I started.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started driving, you know, I had my log book that I turned in at the end of the week. And I had the one that I showed the DOT officer if, you know, I was a little, you know,
and then he had a pack of white crosses in the back pocket, and it was good to go on that trucker speed. We're gonna lighten the mood a little bit. Actually, no, it's going to be, but this is a little section I like to call old men complaining about nonsense. And this may be where we could use some little interdiction from AI.
Am I part of the old men's club now?
I guess it depends on your take on this little segment.
The junior member of the old man's club.
Yeah. I'm getting the grays, boys. I'm getting the grays.
This happened at Chipotle the other day. I went out to get dinner. I was actually been working at home all last week because I was a little under weather and Carrie got sick. And it was, I didn't work at home because I was sick. I was working at home because my boss didn't want me to get other people at the office sick. And since I have one of these jobs, I can work from home. I did work my same exact hours just from my computer at home instead of sitting in there spreading my creepy crud with the rest of the class, which is very nice because that means I can still work without wasting sick days and vacation days, because I would rather be working than feeling like shit than laying in bed watching TV not getting paid feeling like shit. I'd rather get paid feeling like shit than not.
That's why you were logged into Battlefield last week.
But anyhow, I went to Chipotle, and this is the second time in 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, I went to the Chinese food restaurant in the middle of their health inspection. And this is kid's first day, and I was like, oh, your first day, huh? Yeah, I'm seeing a manager walking out, the health inspector's like, yeah, nothing like your first day at work, the health inspector showing up. Well, then last week, I was at Chipotle, and the health inspector was there. And different health inspector, manager's following around. What is the number one ingredient at Chipotle? What's the one thing you need to make anything on that fucking menu?
Rice.
Ding, ding, motherfucking ding. So I get there, and the people in front of me leave, and I step up, and the girl's standing there at the counter. The girl's standing back there behind her. The other dude's standing at the second counter because they get so many takeout orders, they got to have two lines. And then the manager's following the health inspector around like a fucking little pocket magnet. And the girl says, hey, we don't have any rice. It'll be about 15 minutes. I'm like, you know what? I'm sick. I don't feel good. The time I drive somewhere else. So I didn't make a scene. I just sat down. It was cool. Got on TikTok for 22 minutes, and then the rice was up. And she called me up, and I got back at the beginning of the line, and they're pulling the rice thing out, which, sad, I just thought they had a rice cooker. No, they had it in your standard, probably 3-quart, whatever, stainless steel bin that every fast food restaurant has. And they pull it out of this rice bacon thing. And they take it in the back, and I see them putting chicken broth, mixing up, and it was 6:30 at night. And I looked at the young lady who was standing there waiting on the rice. She's like, it's coming. I said, what time do you guys close? She's like, 11. I said, it's 6:30. Yeah. That took 20 minutes to make. yeah, and you got to split it between the front line. I said, do you think maybe you probably want to put another thing of rice in the oven now so that when that rice is gone in 15 minutes? And she just looked at me like, and looked, and no shit, no one put any more rice in. So 20 minutes to cook one serving container of rice that they had, no one thought to put another one or even make cook two at a fucking time. And I'm like, you guys are sitting there dealing with this anxiety of having to tell customers. Because every time a goddamn Uber Eats guy came in, they'd tell the driver, hey, we don't have any rice. You want me to text the customer and let them know? And that that has to suck. They're not enjoying that. They're like, fuck, I got to tell another guy? It's like, so you want to repeat this process in 7.5 minutes? Because that one thing of rice isn't going to last longer than 7 minutes. It takes 20 minutes to cook the shit. Yeah. And they're making my food, and they have three other people behind me, and I'm going to leave. And I'm like, I wasn't lying about the rice thing. I fucking walked out. But I'm just thinking, 7 minutes from now, you're going to be reliving this because the manager's too busy falling around the health inspector to have enough foresight to say, hey, put two things of rice in, or maybe three, because we're open for another 2 hours.
That's one thing. Hey,
you know what? I just had an idea. You should be a business consultant.
You know, for restaurants.
You told the dudes at Publix, you know,
How to
interact with customers.
And, oh, I got two more Publix stories. This is why this old man complained about shit. I'm at Publix every night, whether it's dog food, soda, dinner, whatever. Every day, almost. And every once in a while, not all the time, we're not chicken fanatics, but every once in a while, you know, if you like cooking, so you want to get some, you know, grab a box of chicken, a thing of Hawaiian.
Hang on. For those listening and watching, when he says every day, he means
every fucking day.
Because yeah, when I talk
on
him,
Saturday,
it's not all that. I don't talk to him all the time, but it's usually after work. And when he calls me or something like that, he's like, "Oh, what are you doing? We going fishing or something like that?" I'm like, "I don't know. What you got going on here?" Well, hang on. I gotta go into Publix. I gotta go get food,
soda, dog food, cat litter, whatever.
I'm like every day,
every day. Like every the people in my pub. I've been going to this Publix so long that I remember when the fucking shift manager was in high school and she didn't have tattoos on her arm. But so two incidences. One, and I haven't brought this up to anybody. This one just drives me nuts. I've talked to Gordon about it because he worked in a restaurant too. Your dinner rush. What time is dinner rush, fellas?
5 to 7.
I was going to say it's about 6 o'clock.
5:30 to play it safe. You walk into Publix, and they have their internet orders. Everybody wants fucking breaded chicken finger sandwiches, and they want their boxes of deep-fried chicken and this and that. You know how many times I've walked into Publix at 5:30 wanting a thing of chicken? Sorry, sir, the chicken's down. It's going to be another 20 minutes. Every day, you have a line of assholes coming here wanting chicken.
Oh,
why don't you say, hey, in 20 minutes from now, we're going to have a line of assholes in here wanting fresh chicken. So let's drop the chicken now at 4:45 and not at fucking 5:15. It's like, who the hell is running shit back there, right?
Yeah.
This is basic fundamentals you learn from working at McDonald's and Wendy's when you're in high school, right? And you work your way to the shift manager. It's like, who the hell is running these chicken departments? Well, we have a dinner rush at 5:30. What time should we put chicken down? 5:29. It takes 20 minutes.
It's interesting because the models for retail has changed so much over the years that, you know, it used to be about customer service. Now it's about just-in-time inventory.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know, if they've got chicken cooking and you have to wait and they know they're going to sell all those chickens, that's great. But
go walk the floor, spend some money. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's intentional. Hey, don't have the chicken ready. They're just going to grab chicken aside and leave. Make them wait. They'll get around and do some spontaneous purchasing. Their purchases will go up by 4%.
That's why Costco puts their chicken in the back of the store. So, because that's their cheapest thing in a Costco store is the $4.99 rotisserie chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always out. So you go walk around and you buy an air hockey table and a new TV and, you know, 40 gallons of chicken broth.
Yep.
and all this stuff that you had no intention to buy, you were just going to go in and buy a chicken, but there weren't any fucking chickens.
Yeah. That's it, because you walk around and you go, oh, yeah, I could use 900 pairs of socks while I'm here.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you ever returned an Amazon item to Kohl's?
Kohl's?
Oh, yeah.
No,
oh, yeah.
I've never done
No, I talked Kohl's. About this a few years ago. Somebody at Kohl's got wicked smart, right? Because retail is being hurt by Amazon.
Yeah.
But the way retail stores work is they have a distribution center somewhere within 100 miles of them, and then they load up their trucks and they send them out to all the satellite stores. Amazon does so many returns that they need additional vehicles. Well, you got Kohl's hurting on business. They have plenty of room on these trucks because their inventory is down. But most of these distribution centers are somewhere within an Amazon distribution center. So here's an idea. You get a relationship with Amazon. You load their shit onto your trucks that's going back to the distribution center. Then they have a trolley go pick it up from your distribution center. So they're saving money on shipping. But
and
then
customers get to walk in and...
And where's the Amazon return box at? Is it at the front door?
All the way in the back
by the bathroom. And then they give you your receipt, and on the back of it is 20% off Kohl's item. But if you read the fine print, excludes Nike, Adidas, all name brand shit.
Yeah, all the good shit.
Yeah, but they give you this. So now you're walking back from returning your Amazon item with...
With your Kohl's cash.
With your Kohl's cash, and subconsciously, I just had $50 returned to me from that thing I just returned from Amazon. So it's the same thing. It's like, it's captive audience. Amazon saves money on shipping. Kohl's gets more people in the door. Now they've teamed up with Sephora, which is that makeup line. Kohl's have cut a big old section out of their floor and put a Sephora store right in the middle of their stores now.
Oh, yeah.
So they're super smart. But to this point, and I actually did bring this up, I have greatly reduced my soda intake. I drink maybe 2-3 cans a day now, where I used to drink a shit ton. And one of my vices is Mountain Dew. And because I'm at Publix every fucking day, our Publix, they've taken out 3 lines and they put in self-serve lines, but they still have 4 lines left. And at the end of each line is a mini refrigerator. Every other one's Coke, every other one's Pepsi. I'm sorry, you have 8 lines. So it's 4 Coke, 4 Pepsi, and then they have a huge cooler down by the deli because they just redid the place with open face cooler. Every day I go in there, and all the Mountain Dew coolers, Pepsi coolers, are packed full of 2 rows of Coke Mountain Dew Zero, 2 rows of Mountain Dew Diet, and then sometimes 1 bottle of Mountain Dew. And 4 mini fridges and the big one. And this happened so many times. After the 9th time, I went up to one of the managers. So let me ask you a question. I said, every day I'm in here, and every day I'm looking for Mountain Dew, and every day there's 1 bottle, if I'm lucky, of cold Mountain Dew. And I have a hypothesis. I said, I know you don't care, but I just got to get this off my chest. I said, one of 4 things is happening. A, your Pepsi vendor doesn't like you and not dropping off enough of Pepsi. B, your employees, which is what I think, young kids are drinking the Mountain Dew. And so they're drinking through the cold inventory of Mountain Dew, and plus the allotted amount of Mountain Dew that gets itemized to go to those coolers. And so because you don't want empty spots on your shelf, you have them fill it with the Mountain Dew Zero and Diet Mountain Dew, which doesn't sell. Or C, your inventory manager is bad at his job, doesn't realize how many bottles of Mountain Dew you're selling out of that sectioned off area, and doesn't think to order more. So I said, chances are it's the third one. I said, but why is it you have 4 mini refrigerators and a big open fridge and never have any goddamn Mountain Dew in here? I said, it's insane. Because, and once again, my theory is, and even if it is the employees drinking it, because they're buying it, so it's not a bad thing, but your inventory manager still sucks at his job. Because if you go back in the warehouse and you say, okay, these 4 pallets of the 16-ounce Mountain Dew bottles are allocated to the mini fridges that we're going to cool and sell, and he walks back here on Wednesday, where's the fucking Mountain Dew? Oh, it's sold. A good inventory manager say, okay, well, next week we're going to order 3 more fucking pallets. Not because here's what happens, right? They don't increase the inventory, but you can't have empty spots on the shelf. It looks bad. So now you got to get Billy to come back to the warehouse, grab a pallet of diet, grab a case of diet, grab a case of zero, go fill those voids in. And then when the Pepsi comes in with the new pallet of Mountain Dew, then you got to have Billy go back out there, swap them out. So you're paying him to touch the same bottle of shit three times to fill that void instead of just ordering more Mountain Dew to fucking stock on the shelf to begin with. So you're wasting money, you're wasting labor, and you're annoying your customers. When all you have to do is, okay, let's increase the order of allowed Mountain Dews that we're selling, not giving away, but selling, increase it so that people come in here, the shit's there they're looking for. And it's not what it like happens almost every time I'm in there. It's like, what the hell is the fucking cold Mountain Dew? And once again, this is old man complaining about dumb shit, but this is all basic managerial stuff. If you're a manager, an inventory manager, a department head, whatever, this is all this is part of your job. It's like I used to laugh when I worked at Wendy's. We would run out of French fries. How the fuck does Wendy's run out of French fries? Because our inventory manager sucked. He didn't look at the numbers, see how much French fries. Hey, we're selling a lot. Why are we selling more French fries than we are do hamburgers? Because this is Wendy's. People buy French fries to go with their Frosties. Not everything gets out of the combo. We're selling a lot of Frosties. We're selling a lot of French fries. So you're selling more fries than you do combos. So maybe you should add maybe six more bags of French fries to the next week order. But you don't. And so then we run out of French fries. And you got to send somebody across town to get French fries from one of the other fucking Wendy's. It's your fucking job. It's like it's basic fundamentals to managing a restaurant.
Hang on. I'll be right back.
Okie doke. But yeah, and so it drives me nuts. I don't get it.
And well, it's kind of interesting because working in a corporate retail environment, we only have a certain parameters that we can work in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot of times where we don't stock something. If, you know, your case is different because, you know, you're buying Mountain Dew all the time, but.
Well, not just me, but clearly everybody, because it's always sold out. See, I get it. You're not going to stock something that doesn't sell, but if you're stocking something that sells out and to fill the holes on the shelf, you're stocking it with something that doesn't sell. How about you order less of the shit that doesn't sell, more of the shit that it does sell, that you're not filling the hole of the popular shit with the unpopular shit.
Yeah, you would think so. I've got a whole store of stuff that doesn't move and, you know, stuff that I'm constantly running out of. But it's because there's, you know, programs and metrics.
Spiffs and kickbacks and all that.
You know, all that stuff that I don't have any control over. And I get the old man complaining about shit all the time. And it's like, why don't you do something about it? But yeah, I'd love to.
Well, maybe let's say it's a distribution problem, right? Because we know during the pandemic, there was a supply chain issue and Diet Coke cans ran out. So let's say it's a distribution problem. Okay, your manager doesn't suck. I'm just being an asshole. Hey, there's only so much Pepsi Mountain Dew that can go around in the city. So this is all we have and we sell out. If that's the case, then maybe tell your employees, hey, look, I get it. You guys like fucking Mountain Dew, but you're going to have to buy some Yellow for a while because, you know, we got people coming here looking to buy this shit and we're drinking it all. I don't know. I mean, there's got to be something.
Yeah, I agree.
Of course, then again, I don't think they really give a shit because if they're getting paid and their employees are paying for it, what do they care?
Yeah, but what's the number one thing a Publix employee asks you when you get up to the line?
Did you find everything you were looking for? Did
you
find
everything you needed,
And Publix's thing is if we don't have what you're looking for, go to the customer service counter and we'll order it for you. Well, here's a thought. Order some more fucking Mountain Dew.
Makes sense.
But yeah, it's, I don't know. It just drives me nuts. But more of the thing that drives me nuts is the chicken at the dinner rush and, you know. And by the way, I got my rice. I'm not worried about me. I'm just... like, hey, if you guys don't want to deal with 20 minutes of anxiety again 5 minutes from now, get a little ahead of the game and put another thing of rice in right now.
Well, that's attention spans and laziness.
And the manager having her head up the ass of the fucking health department guy.
Right. Well, and that's probably the big component of that, because the manager probably has to go around and say, cook rice, cook vegetables, cook meat. Cook these things because no line employee is either empowered to do it or is getting paid enough in their minds to take the initiative to do it.
Yes, well, because and that's bad management, because even when I worked at Wendy's, you had the go-getters, right? Hey, it'd be cool if I got to be a shift manager, so I'm going to be the brown nose, or I'm going to put in a little extra effort so the manager knows I'm here, so that when they got their head up the health department guy's ass, people need shit done, I'm Johnny on the spot, I'll help you get the shit done. But sadly, either A, they're not willing to pay anybody to have a Johnny on the spot, or B, no one's motivated to become Johnny on the spot because they don't want to be there to begin with and have absolutely no dream of, and not because I want to become a Wendy's manager, I just want more money, because at the time I was making fucking $4.75 an hour.
Well, I think that, you know, especially the workforce, the younger kids today, I mean, there's no drive. Everything that they want to look, that they have to look forward to, or that they're interested in, is online.
Yeah,
doing physical labor anymore, really, like that, like there is such a need these days for trades. There's such a need these days for truckers. Mm-hmm. There's such a need these days for those jobs that nobody wants to do, that we really need, are essential to our operating life.
Is there truly jobs that no one wants to do? Because, I mean, are there truly jobs? I mean, if we have jizz moppers, then we have... Don't act like you don't know what a jizz mopper is.
Excuse the fuck out of me!
You never seen Clerks? Jizz mopper, the guy has to clean up the jizz at the nudie booth.
Yeah.
And Randall says, I don't know about you, I found if you don't clean it just right, it leaves streaks.
So I don't think that there's jobs that people don't want to do. I think it's jobs people don't want to do for the money that companies are willing to pay.
Yeah,
that's what it boils down to. And I can tell you, being really, in the trades, it's absolutely like that.
Well, and I'm in the process of hiring a couple of people right now.
Yeah.
Jizz moppers?
Well, you would think that that's what they would get hired to do.
Here, hold on a second.
You know how much money the average jizz mopper makes per hour?
What's a jizz mopper?
He's the guy that cleans out the nudie booths after each guy jerks off.
Nudie booth?
Yeah, nudie booth. Never been in a nudie booth?
Guess not.
Oh, man, it's great. You go into this booth and there's this glass between you and these chicks. And they put on a show for you for like $10.
What kind of a show?
Think of the weirdest, craziest shit you'd like to see chicks do. I mean, these chicks do it all. They insert things into any opening on their body. Any opening.
Can we not talk about this now?
The jizz mopper's job is to clean it up after each guy shoots a load. Because practically everybody does it right on the window. I don't know if you know this or not, but come leave streaks if you don't clean it right away.
Should be fired.
Well, I'm sorry. I guess we kind of got carried away.
Well, I don't know if sorry can make up for it. You've highly offended me.
Well, if you think that's offensive, check this out.
Shows him a porn man. Did you ever watch that show Comic Book Men? It was on Spike TV. It was the Kevin Smith comic book store. They had a reality show in the mid-2000s.
I don't think so.
Anyhow, the guy who was playing the customer, he was the main proprietor of the comic book store in the Comic Book Man show.
What were you saying, Morgan?
He's hiring jizz moppers.
Oh, yeah. I'm in the process of hiring people. And I've been in my position for 8 months. And this will be the fourth person I've hired. And I had one guy who had been with the company for 33 years. Mm-hmm. He retired. The guy that replaced him got poached for more money, and I've got another guy who's getting ready to leave who is basically getting poached for more money. And it's just it's really interesting, because we pay a decent amount of money for a truck driver, but
sure,
I've seen truck driving jobs out there where they're trying to pay like $15 to $19 an hour in Florida.
That was good money 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, now if you've got a CDL with a hazmat, you know, you're starting at $25 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's even like on the low end. You know, there's guys making $30+ an hour, depending on what they're hauling around, you know, just doing local driving.
And so that sucks, because when you're on the lower end of the payroll scale, then you're going to get the lower end of the talent pool.
Well, exactly. And that's, you know, my industry generally pays less than any other industry. And I don't know why that is, but that just seems to be the norm in the, you know, almost 25 years I've been in the industry. But it is tough. I mean, you know, and to that, I think that the old guy loyalty to a company.
Oh, that's long is gone.
You know, and people who jump jobs make more money than people who stay put.
Yeah, because there's no pension anymore, right?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, everything's 401k now, but that's the thing, even in the plumbing industry. You know, we see that all the time where, you know, when I first started a little bit higher, but your starting rate when I started 10 years ago, 9 years ago, was you started at 10 to 12 bucks an hour. Green. You knew nothing. You know, maybe you had some minor mechanical experience. Maybe you're starting right out of school. Who knows? Your starting was 10 to 12 bucks an hour. Obviously, that's not enough to live on. Even at the time, that really wasn't enough to live on. You know, I had struggled at the time to try, you know, and pay a mortgage and bills and everything with two incomes. But that's the thing that you know, and in even, you know, my generation does it, and especially the younger generation definitely does it. They make the rounds.
Mm-hmm.
They start at this company, and then, okay, well, you know, this company isn't, you know, paying me to, you know, they're wanting me to provide more work, but they're not paying me and compensating me and all that stuff. And I understand that to a certain extent, you know, because I also understand that, you know, I get it. Inflation happens, you know, your cost of living has gone up. You know, when I first moved down here, my rent for a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom house with a 2-car garage in Lehigh was $1,095 a month. You know, now my apartment goes for $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that was in the span of 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. But also, you know, to that same point too, you know, the loyalty thing, that doesn't exist either. You know, unfortunately, especially in the industry that I'm in, there is no opportunity for advancement really anymore.
Yeah, everything's got a ceiling.
Once you want, you know, if you put 10 years into a company, the guy before you's got 15 to 20 years into that company. There's always somebody that's been there longer than you, and there's always somebody that's going to have the more experience or you know, something like that to get that office position, you know, because that's always a lot of the guys, they're get out of the field and go to the office or something like that. And even, you know, some companies out there where it's like they pay you less to be in the office than they do to pay in the field.
Well, the same reason they pay you less to work second shift than to do third shift, because no one wants to work third shift.
Right. But yeah, the jumping around thing, I mean, I see it in my industry all the time, because I've seen guys where they've left my company, they went to go work for four other companies, and they came back and they're making $5 or $6 more an hour than they were when they left.
And one of the problem is A, there's no pensions, right? And B, right. There's no, when you work for a company that has a ceiling, right? Yeah. Or they have a scale based on position. What tends to happen is, over years, they might start to adjust for inflation, but they don't give the old guys cost of living adjustments, right? And this is one of the things I was talking about. Could you like imagine living in California before they made the minimum wage $20 an hour? And you got Steve, who's been working at the plant for 15 years, and he worked his way up from $4 an hour to 25. And he's already pissed now that these dipshits that are green behind the ears are coming in making $14 an hour. And he took him 20 years to get up to 20. But now they're making 20, but they're not giving Steve, they're not paying Steve 40. So now Steve has been working there 20 years, is making 25 an hour. And the new guy who just started yesterday is making 20. Steve's fucking pissed.
Right.
And that's the downside of super inflated minimum wages or even cost of living rates. I mean, not cost of living, but when they do inflation price adjustments for hourly wages, they never give a cost of living to the guy who's been there forever. Right. And so now he's like, what the fuck? I've been here for all these years. And literally this guy don't know how to fucking turn his, he don't know how to charge the battery on his DeWalt. And he's making $3 an hour less than I am.
But see, here's the thing. Well, you're not supposed, on a minimum wage, you're not supposed to be able to live. You're not supposed, it's an entry-level position.
Fast food jobs were never meant to. How is a mom of three supposed to pay her rent working at McDonald's? Is she a store manager? No, she's not supposed to.
Right, fast food jobs. Fast food
is for kids in high school and guys that just got out of prison.
Or, you know, college, or you're the store manager or the district manager.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You can't be my age, Don's age, Morgan's age, and be, you know, working at fucking, you know, McDonald's going, oh, I can't afford my rent. Oh, the minimum wage should be higher. No, get a better fucking job.
I grew
up, trade, learn a skill or something like that and figure it the fuck out like the rest of us had to.
Bag boys. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio in 1997. All the bag boys worked at high. When you're 15, you got a job as a bag boy. 2001, I moved to California. I just got done building ambulances, worked my way up to $12 an hour. 1991, I moved to California. I was trying to find a job. I went everywhere. Was building ambulances 1 week, and I finally found a job working part-time, putting fucking heavy shit that people bought at Sears in the back of their Miatas. Here, let me put this 8-shelf roll-away toolbox in the back of your fucking 2-seater car. Let me make this work.
Yeah.
And I remember the L.A. Bag Workers Union was on strike. Here you have Podunk Don from Ohio. Bag Workers Union? And you drive by Albertsons and Ralph's, and you'd see these 30 and 40-year-old dudes and women out on the picket line. They were out there for 6 months picketing, yelling at the scabs. Yep. And I'm like, you're a bagger at 40?
And you're bitching about the money that you make.
They were making, in 2003, $15. They were making more bagging groceries at Ralph's than I made building vehicles that saved your fucking life when you got in a car accident.
That's fucking sad. That's fucking sad. I was like,
I'm going to school to be for computers? Fuck that. I'm just going to go get a job as a bagging scab.
Yeah.
But, and once again, unions love you. Really? Unions love you because those poor son of bitches sat on the picket line through Christmas. No one did shit. These guys were standing out on the line for 8 hours a day protesting to be a fucking bagger during the holidays.
And that's part of the biggest, you know, or part that's part of the problem is, you know, yes, inflation and everything like that, that's that, you know, that contributes, but when you have the minimum wage gap being closed to where now, you know, the minimum wage and everything was, what is it now? Like, is it $15 an hour now?
Probably depends on state, but I can tell you.
Yeah, if you can figure that out. When you're closing the gap on the minimum wage where, you know, people are entry-level jobs are making, and I get it. It's hard. It's supposed to be. It teaches you lessons.
Yeah, just like, you know, you hear all the time.
Life lessons.
I'm 20 years old. I can't afford a new car. You're not supposed to. I didn't know if I couldn't get my first brand new off the lot car until I was 35.
And you buy that fucking turd, you know, out of fucking Jim Bob's fucking driveway for, you know, nowadays probably cost you about $3,000 or $4,000.
Or you do what Don did.
Shit box.
Or you do what Don did, whose ex-wife looked like a white trash version of Sarah Michelle Gellar. You put her in a halter top, you walk in the buy here, pay here lot, and get that fucking weekly car payment knocked down to fucking $99. And you go pay a weekly fucking car payment.
You figure it the fuck out. Life isn't going to fucking hand you everything. Okay. And that's part of the problem, is that they're fucking handing them this minimum wage at $15 to $20 an hour. Fuck
you. Real quick rundown. Now I don't know what this means on the clock, but, states with minimum wages above 7, it says Alaska, $11.91, then it says on the clock plus 3, so I don't know what the fuck that means, maybe overtime. Arizona, $14.70, on the clock 15, I don't know, I'm gonna ignore the on the clock. So Arizona, $14.70, Arkansas, $11, California, $16.50, but we know for fast food it's $20. Or what at is least it here? In LA County. Florida is $13, increasing to $14 on September 30th. So, actually, congratulations. Two more days and you guys are getting a raise.
Well, see, what's it? Well, no, you said September 30th.
Oh, yeah, this is August. So a month days. And 2 days.
So,
once I said, I didn't have to like, take math in my high school freshman persistency test. I was in LA class.
What was it, though? A few years ago, when all this stuff started, they said that the U.S., I think it was the U.S. overall, was supposed to have their minimum wage starting at $15 an hour by like 2032 yeah, or some
the,
silly
what's
shit.
What's the federal minimum wage?
Yeah, what's federal?
Thank you, ChatGPT. Like I know I was talking shit about you 20 minutes ago, but I need to know what minimum wage is.
You fucking scumbags.
Federal minimum wage in the United States is $7.25 per hour. So state minimum wage is double that of... And see, so yeah, and hey, but that's why federalism should work, right? If the state don't like what the federal government's doing, you have the ability to change it. So yeah, minimum wage from government is exactly what it was in 2002, but the states are picking up the slack.
I bet you the kids have no idea what the fuck we're talking about states' rights right now.
Yeah. Well, see, but again, the fact that, you know...
Well, yeah, they know what states' rights is because that's the thing that allows them to buy marijuana, even though the government still says it's a Schedule I narcotic.
But just, you know, just the fact that, you know, that minimum wage is closing the gap. It's like, you know, my starting in the trades was, you know, supposed to be 10 to 12 bucks. Like I said, I started a little bit higher because I got lucky, but 10 to 12 bucks an hour. That's, you know, that's learning an actual skill.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get upwards. You know, we had this one kid at a previous job that I worked at that started in the field because he started out in the office. He was doing dispatching, right? He wanted more money, but he also wanted to learn the trade. Okay. So he chose plumbing and I was his manager at the time and they started him at $18 an hour with no experience, gave him a truck, told him you need to get your own tools.
Whose nephew was he?
Nobody. He was a nobody to this company. Nobody. He just walked in and got a job as a dispatcher and started him at $18 an hour. Then he was bitching and moaning and complaining because he was there for a year and he hadn't gotten any kind of a raise and he wanted $20 an hour.
Oh, wow.
So they came to me and I sat down with them and I was like, look, you know, you're really going to have to push yourself and you got a lot to learn, dude. Like I've been in this trade for at the time of 7 or 8 years or something like that, which is not that long. And I made nowhere near what you're making starting, you know, at $18 an hour and you already want more and you've only been doing this for a year. So I said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you your two and you're going to go for your 20, but you got to prove it.
Yep.
And you got to push. Otherwise it's going to take you twice as long to get to 22, you know, fucking 3 months later, he comes in and he's like, look, you know, somebody's offering me a job as a full-time technician, starting out at $25 an hour. I went, here's the problem with that, dude. You're not a full-time technician. You don't know everything that I know.
Yep.
You don't know everything that the my main full-time technician knows, and he doesn't know everything that I know. So I promise you.
So I can go get the job.
Right. So I promise you, you go and get that $25 an hour job, and I promise you within 30 days, maybe even less than that, they're going to kick your ass out on the street because you bullshit it.
Well, not only that, but I was thinking about that earlier, too. It's like the reason jobs like skills jobs start so low is to weed out the slackers.
Right.
They don't want people who suck at the job trying to stick around because they don't want the money. They want the people to say, okay, this shit sucks, or I kind of like the shit, the pay sucks, but if I hang around, the pay is going to get better.
Right.
You know, so yeah, it's to weed out the shitty people and keep the good people. And then once you pass that probational period of 90 days or whatever, or three months or depending on what type of job it is, then you get a raise to accommodate your knowledge and to congratulate you from not being a shit turd.
The problem with that, though, is once you get up to, you know, and I've been doing this for 9 years, and even at my level,
you hit that ceiling.
You hit the ceiling. And then you're like, okay, well, you know, we've got inflation, we've got cost of living, and all
and
that
no
stuff.
Pension, like, no retirement. So it's like,
So you end up getting to a point where it's like, well, you know, I'm either going to sit here and I'm going to be at the ceiling with, you know, no potential movement up or anything like that, and no raises,
and
or I'm
going
to have to play the fucking, I'm going to have to play the carousel, and I'm going to have to go around and fucking find a new job.
Yep.
So.
But we're running long. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of the What's in Your Head podcast. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. And send us an email at info@d-410.com or send us a message at whatsinyourhead.com on our Facebook. I'm sorry, What's in Your Head at the Facebook page. And if you're watching us on YouTube, thanks for hanging out. Please like, subscribe, and share us with a friend. Until next time, we'll holler at you all later.
Later.
You later.
Recording
dude.
Stopped.